This trade route's real troll. So where were the first five and four four when you joined them?
They were at a village called Hopston, which was way over in Westphalia.
Do you know how you spell it?
H-O-P-S-T-E-N, Hopston. We were visitors in the village school. And there was a big house in the village which had been taken over to use as a mess hall. And it was very hot weather and dusty, and there we were sleeping on the floor of this village school. And we started trading.
And this would be about June?
This was sometime in June, yeah. We started training on the tanks had been taken away. We were B squadron. We were formed B squadrons, first five and four. For most of the tanks had been taken away for a modification, but they left two or three tanks with us, a Crocodile and a couple of other Churchill for training on.
What was the training like on the Crocodile?
Well, there was somewhere in the area was a Reiner airfield, which has been a Luftwaffe airfield. We train on the Crocodiles on this airfield. It was hard work, because you had to fill the trailer held 400 gallons, and you had to fill it with 58 gallon drums. Well, 8 gallon drum of flame fuel was very heavy. And we had to get these off the truck, carry them over to the trailer, and there was a chap sitting on top of the trailer with a large funnel pouring these 8 gallon, well, it took two men to pour the drum into the large funnel to fill this blinking trailer up. So that was 400 gallons you had to fill up with 8 gallon drums. And then of course there's the bit of the flaming, which we watched. I didn't have to do any actual framing, but that's what it amounted to, more or less.
What did you think of them as a weapon?
Well, I thought they were an horrible, barbaric weapon, but I thought just what the Japs needed, because they used them a lot against the Germans all through from Normandy onwards all the way up to the end of the war. So if they can use them against the Germans, then they can certainly use them against the Japs. But I mean, our opinion of the Japs was such that we thought, well, the flamethrowers are just what they need.
What did you think of them? Why were you so down on them, if you see what I mean?
I can't remember, but we must have had enough feedback from the atrocities to know what they were doing. So I know we hated the thought of them, and we thought the flamethrowers were just what they needed. Just what we knew about them, I can't remember, but there must have been enough information coming back about their atrocities. And the treatment of prisoners and such like.
So what happened next?
I went on leave, and I came back off leave.
Back to Britain?
Yeah. When I came back off leave, a chap suddenly said to me, "Colin, be careful what you say to Colin so-and-so, because he's accidentally shot somebody." He'd been larking about with 2 6 guns, and he'd shot one of the blokes, and the bloke he'd shot was a 19-year-old who'd just come over from this country, and he died. So that was a bit of a letdown. Anyway, he was court-martialed, and he got 56 days in the glasshouse. In August, we moved to Belgium, to Ghent. We were going to fly over to this country for embarkation leave and before going out east. But they dropped the first atom bomb on Japan as we were moving to Ghent. In Ghent, the squadron was billeted in a convent school, empty convent school. And I believe the first advance party was at the airfield, Brussels airfield, being weighed in with their kit ready for flying over. Anyway, then they dropped the second atom bomb, and the Japanese, while we were there, the Japanese surrendered, so they cancelled it off.
Were you pleased?
anticlimax. No, I wasn't. I thought, well, what a shocking waste of, because we were glad to leave Hoxton and West Germany behind, because it wasn't very thrilling. And so we, after a week again, we travelled back to Germany, and we're in the same area, but at a different village. What was it called? Recke, it was called. R-E-C-K, I think it was, or something like that. It was in the same area, not far from Hoxton. Very miserable accommodation, old houses that they cleared the people out of and that. And we got no vehicles, except we'd only had trucks, with no fighting vehicles, with no nothing, no role. Pretty miserable existence for a while. Just did the fatigues and played football when it didn't rain, and did fatigues around the village and things like that. Miserable. And then and then it started getting cold, and it was even more miserable because there was no heat anywhere. Anyway, in the autumn, around about December, during the autumn, I went on a course, physics course. It was called St Andrew's College. It was called St Andrew's because it was in an area occupied by the 52nd Lowland, Scottish Lowland Division. Anyway, I went to this college for 3 weeks on a course on physics, which I enjoyed very much, because I hadn't done much physics at school, and I thought it was very good. I enjoyed that. Anyway, in the about beginning of December, we moved to a place called Riesenbeck, which was on the Dartmouth Thames Canal, next to the Dartmouth Thames Canal. And we were there during the winter, again in requisitioned houses, but they were not very nice, not very thrilling accommodation, with no nappy, no nothing, just the mess hall. And all we did was guards. We did a fortnight's guard on. I was on a 2 week guard on a signals depot. It's been a German signals depot, but I was allowed to take over. Nobody there except a guard. But it was 2 weeks. It was snow on the ground. It was freezing cold. There was no heat anywhere. It was very uncomfortable. The only heat was a brazier that we kept going at the gate. We had a sentry box and a brazier at the gate, and we kept the brazier going with spare wood that we could find around the depot.
Had the non-fraternisation sort of gone by then? How did you get on with the Germans by then?
I can't remember. Well, we didn't meet any there, except we didn't meet any. When on Centrigo once, somebody had a couple of girls there talking to him, but that's all.
What about the black market? Any involvement in that? Were you aware of it, perhaps?
Oh, I was aware of it, yes. I mean, there was the cigarette racket was going for 12 months, where you sold cigarettes to the Germans to get marks, which you could spend, and you didn't need to draw any pay then. So for about 12 months, hardly anybody drew pay, except when they were going on leave, and then you drew a lot.
Any more serious black market you were aware of?
No. We had a. You could go on half day trips to Dusseldorf, and there was a what they call a black market in the. They called it a black market in the park. You could walk along the park, and all the people would be there standing with things to swap for cigarettes. I think I just got a towel. I swapped some cigarettes for a towel, but they had various things to swap for towels because people were. Cigarettes were currency for 12 months or more.
What happened next then?
Where was I? Oh, the reason back, 2 weeks guard on this thing. Then I did a 2 week guard on the Dutch border. Now again, billets were very cold, but we had a brazier going at the sentry box on the border. 2 weeks there, we did other guards, which I can't just remember. We always seem to spend our life guarding things. And then in April, end of March or April of 1946, we moved to a barracks in Verden, which is north of Emden, north Germany. We were in this barracks. We shared just a squadron shared the barracks with the Gordon Highlands, I think it was. We were there a few weeks. Well, it wasn't a bad place to be, but then at the end of April, beginning of May, we were moved to a place called Gerden near Hanover, and all the regiment was gathered in this village of Gerden, in requisitioned houses in the village. I remember a nice mess hall, and decent accommodation, and life wasn't too bad in Gerden. But in late August, I think it was, the regiment was disbanded.
How did you feel about that?
Oh, rather upset. But the regiment was disbanded at the end of August. I think it was the end of August, beginning of September. And I was put on a truck with about 15 others and transferred to the 14th, 20th King's Hussars at Wuppertal in the Ruhr.
And what were you doing with them?
You know, to start with nothing, but after a while, I was they were made recce. They didn't have a role. They were just had a few armoured cars. They were just for police in the local area. But we were after a while they were made recce regiment to the 2nd Infantry Division, and they received a lot of second hand Chaffee tanks. So
which tanks?
Chaffee. Chaffee. They were American Chaffee tanks. Reconnaissance tanks they were. They were quite nice tanks. So I was put in a crew. I was a wireless operator on a Chaffee tank.
What were they like, the tanks?
Chaffee tanks. There was about 20 tons. Fast. They had an automatic gearbox. They could do 40 miles forward, 40 miles backwards, and they had a 75 millimetre gun like a Sherman. And the inside, they didn't have a turret basket. It was all open plan inside. They were a good recce tank. Like I say, they were fast, and I thought it was quite nice as a recce tank.
And how long were you at Wuppertal?
I was at Wuppertal from about September 46 until I was demobbed in April 47.
And did you have any contact with the Germans during that time?
Only a little.
Was there any trouble with them?
No. Well, there was a bit of odd bits of trouble in Wuppertal. You weren't allowed to carry your own guns, but a lot of us had guns, because I, for instance, had a German automatic, which I used to carry with me. Lots of unofficial guns were carried.
Why?
In case you met any trouble, if you were on your own in Wuppertal.
What, Germans would attack you?
In case, yes. I mean, I don't think it happened very much, but just in case. But, what we were saying. Oh, in Wuppertal itself was a YMCA, and some ladies ran the YMCA, English ladies, and they started running trips, sort of interest trips to places around Wuppertal. And one, for instance, was to a dye works, and one was to a printing works, a dye printing works, and one was to some other sort of works, I forgot. And I went on some of these, and I went on one to a dye works, and when I got there and saw the dye, and it was similar to where I'd worked, so I was showing an interest in things and asking a few questions, and the manager who was showing us around said, where did you work? And I said, Courtauld's. And he said, did you know Mr. Whittaker? Oh, I said, yes, he's the manager at our place. He said, oh, well, he was here in 1923 visiting us. He was Dr. Whittaker by then, but he was Mr. Whittaker in those days. So that's all I can remember of that. I went on a few of these visitors, they were interesting. And of course, you were talking to the Germans then. And at one stage at Wuppertal, they put me to work in the ration store. And in the ration store, they had a German working in there. He was had been in the crew of a Tiger tank in Normandy, but he'd been captured by the Americans, and he spoke English with an American accent. So he said, "We ran out of gas." We ran out of gas, so I used to talk to him. But I don't remember I'm in any much contact with. We used to have two German waitresses in the mess hall, so we used to speak to them. And there used to be a German woman used to, in Wuppertal, we had a naffy in the barracks. It was a barracks, so there was a naffy in the barracks, small naffy in the barracks, and a German woman ran the naffy. So you just had that sort of contact, but I personally didn't go having any contact with the people outside.
And were you looking forward to demobilisation?
I was, no. I didn't know whether to look forward to it or not. I didn't know. I mean, after 4.5 years in the army, I didn't know whether I wanted to leave it or not, because you could sign on for so many months if you wanted to do.
So what happened when demobilisation? That was 4th of April 47?
April 47. I was demobbed. I was on sent on myself by myself on a train to somewhere where I had to pick up another train. Where the hell did I go to? I was put on the train at Essen to go to.
Doesn't matter.
I can't remember. I had to go to somewhere else to pick up. So I was on my own on this train, driving on the train passing through Essen, and I was looking down on Essen. And I was sad, I didn't know whether I should believe in Germany or not, but anyway, I did, and I had to pick up a train somewhere else, and we went to Cuxhaven, and the train was full, it was a British-only train, full of people on demob. We went to Cuxhaven, got the boat over to Hull, sailed overnight to Hull, and at Hull we went by train to York, to the demob centre at York, where I collected a suit and shirt and
what did you think of?
Well, it all looked all right to me. I mean, you couldn't buy civilian clothes, so it all looked okay.
Now, what about you after the war? I mean, how did you get back into civilian life?
Well, to start with, you had so many weeks leave. I don't know if it was 6 weeks leave, but I didn't have all 3 months or whatever it was. I just started working. Started work in the June, beginning of June.
At the dye works.
Back at the old job, yeah.
And how did you feel after all that time away? I mean, did you slot back in?
Fairly well. See, I'd done 3 years at this particular job before going in the army, and it had been not a very good 3 years, because all my blokes slightly older than myself had all gone in the forces, so I was there with sort of nobody just above me, just higher authority, and I didn't have a good time really. So it was a bit of a relief going in the army in one way, but coming back after all this time in the army, I came back feeling refreshed and more confident, and I was sort of I was better getting, I was better than I left it.
Did you stay there long, or was that
weird? I left it all. I stayed there all the time.
And in your own self, do you think that the war, your army service, had done you any good or any bad? Other than did it make you more confident, as you mentioned, and did it do you any harm mentally or physically?
No,
well?
It didn't do me any harm. I always thought it did me a world of good, and I felt as if it was a good time of my life being in the army.
In what way did it do you good then, in all?
Difficult to imagine, but I mean, the fact of having faced danger and see so many chaps have been killed, that you think, well, after this, it's everything is a bonus sort of thing. So difficult to say what good it did me. It's that it I felt a lot better after it than before it.
And you remember now of this south of the border Fife and Forfar Yeomanry group.
Yeah.
What made you rejoin? What made you join that? And is it important to you?
It's not very important. It's I'm glad to be in it, but it's not highly important. But I'm in it. I used to correspond with a number of people before it was formed. I used to write to a number of people. If in 1982, when the Falklands was on, and I thought of all these chaps going 8,000 miles south to the Falklands, I thought it's a dangerous business for them, and it reawakened my thoughts on the war, and I read the Taurus Pursuant. I got that out and read it and looked at it and thought about it, and that was that. But then in 1985 I was on holiday, and I came back off holiday, and the next door neighbour said a bloke called Spud Murphy came to see while you were away, and he's left a telephone number. And Spud Murphy had been with me in the army, he'd been in our troop in the army. And I phoned this, and Spud Murphy came to visit me. He was lived in Australia, but he'd come over visiting, and he had my address, and he'd come to see me when I wasn't here. Anyway, when I phoned him, he came to see me, and he came here and I had his dinner here. And he said, have you got that book? And I said, you mean Taurus Pursuant? He said, yeah. He says, I had mine stolen at some point, and I haven't got one. So we had a look at it, and we were looking at the names of the Roll of Honour and all this. And he said, when he was leaving, he said, do you think you could try and get me one? I said, well, I'll try. Not a lot of hope, but I'll try. Anyway, I tried various things, writing to books, various book search organisations, and I was writing to them. And what's that firm in London?
Doesn't matter.
I can't just think of the name of it. And also some friends used to pass on the Scottish Evening Post, so I thought, I won't ask for the Taurus Pursuant, I'll ask for the Regimental History, which I knew existed because I'd seen it in Manchester Central Library. And there was a page in the Sunday Evening Post where you could put little adverts into asking for things, so I put in asking for the Regimental History, you see. So I got two replies from people up in Scotland. I mean, there's a regimental association up there which I didn't know anything about, you see. I didn't. But anyway, these chaps told me that you couldn't get the Regimental History for love of money because they were all sold out. But they told me about the union in 86, you see, back end of 86. And they sent me got somebody to send me an invitation, and they sent, one of them sent me a tie, and so I went up for this reunion in Cooper in December 1986, and one of these chaps was waiting for me at the desk, and there was none of B Squadron there except Major Sir John Gilmore and his tank driver, not. But this chap sat me with Air Squadron, and I was there with some of the Air Squadron lads, including Steele Brownlee, who was near them. So I was chatting with these and chatting with Steele Brownlee and making contact with him. So after that, I was writing to a couple of them in Scotland and Steele Brownlee. Somehow I got to write to some other people. Oh, and then I used to get the track link from the Tank Museum. I started getting that because I heard about that. And there was an article about one of our tanks being restored, a Comet being restored. It was a Comet picture on the front page. So I sent for some extra copies, and I sent one to Steele Brownlee. And I said, do you know anybody who else might be interested? So he gave me the address of Bill Wallace at Cheltenham, and he said, and send one to Sir John Gilmore as well, he'd like to see one. So I got some extra copies and sent them all to these people, and one or two others I can't just think of. And at the same time, Jeff Heywood wrote to me, because he was writing his memoirs and he wanted to any information I could give him. So, because Steele Brownlee had given him my address.
So gradually, more and more of you.
So she started getting more and more like that. And then this French student wrote to me, via Bill Wallace, wanting information about the crossing of the Seine. And so I couldn't help him because I wasn't there. I could only help him about some personnel he was asking about. But then I'd received from Scotland a list of some of their contacts, and one of them was Ron Cox. So I wrote to a number of people, including Ron Cox, if they could help this French student, and most of them couldn't. But then I started writing to Ron Cox, you see, and that's how it went on. So, and then in 94, some of the blokes got together on this Antwerp visit, and they must have decided then that they would try to start a South of the Border group, and Jeff Heywood, I think he was the leading light, he sent me word, would I like to join the South of the Border group, and of course I was quite happy to do so.
And do you go to many of their reunions?
Well, I go to one a year. They have two a year, so I go to one a year. Usually the easiest one to get to. One year I was going to go to two, because the second one was at Nottingham, and that would have been very handy for me, but I was very ill with a cold and I couldn't go, which was very sickening, because Ron Forbes from Pitlochry was there, and I would have liked to have seen him, you see.
Are there many you know when you get at the meetings? Are there many you sort of know, recognise from them? Or?
No, there's only Ron Cox and Ron Forbes who goes that I would know. There was one chap who was the electrician in B Squadron who used to go, but he's died since. I can't just think of his name now.
Newman.
He died. Yeah. And he only went to one, the first one. And it was quite nice meeting him on the table. And it was quite a jolly table that we were on. There was him and Terry, remember his name?
Isn't
that? Well, yeah. But quite a lively table. But anyway, it was the only one he went to, and he's died since.
Thank you very much.